I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. What is the state of opera today? How are companies appealing to new and traditional audiences? What are the venue options outside the walls of the opera house? Who are the composers and where do they draw their inspiration? Today in Radio Times, we put the spotlight on three much-in-demand composers with connections to Philadelphia and will play selections from their work. Ana Sokolovic is a Serbian-born, Montreal-based composer whose opera, Wedding, is having its American premiere this weekend in Philadelphia, presented by Opera Philadelphia and Fringe Arts at the new Fringe Arts venue at 140 North Columbus Boulevard here in Philadelphia. And Ana, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for the invitation.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Missy Mazzoli, and she's a Lansdale-born, Brooklyn-based composer who is composer in residence at Opera Philadelphia, also has an indie rock band called Victoire. And Missy, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us is Lembit Beecher, a California-born, New York-based, also composer in residence at Opera Philadelphia, and much of his music is drawn from his Estonian heritage. And Lembit, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
It's great to be here.
You know, I have to say, looking at all three of your resumes and bios, you have commissions to Opera Philadelphia, composer in residence. You are composing. You're winning awards. And it looks, Ana, like opera's doing pretty well these days. Would you agree with that?
Oh, it depends from which point of view. I'm extremely happy to have opportunity to write operas, but there is many, many composers, they don't. And I think I want really to congratulate this Opera Philadelphia first composer program, which they have for young professionals, and also to have this idea to do a connection with the Fringe Art and to go from the large halls to the smaller venues and to do something different, which is the part of our reality. Mm. So I think this is very, very positive.
How do you see it, Missy? And you're kind of new to opera, I would say.
I am. I definitely feel very fortunate to be associated with Opera Philadelphia, which is such an amazing company that they're able to do progressive, very risky new works, but combine that with repertoire work. So it's a fantastic opportunity to be composer in residence. But yeah, I do feel, I mean, living in Brooklyn where I do, there's a lot of composers who are turning to opera, writing their first opera. And it's kind of incredible because it's the most expensive and practical art form maybe on earth. And yeah, everyone's doing it. So there's this real buzz, I think, in Philadelphia and New York in particular about opera right now, which is exciting.
What's your perspective on it?
Oh, well, it's such an exciting art form, I think. Partly our culture is so visual these days, and there's so many expressive possibilities in opera. I think when you stop thinking about the old structures, that anything that there's so many ways of combining visuals with music, with sets in very different venues, that I think composers are reacting to that and finding different ways to express themselves.
Well, it's funny because I was listening to all of your compositions in preparation for the show, and I kept saying, so what is opera? I mean, mm-hmm. because each of you is doing something so different with music, mm-hmm. with voices, with instruments, and mm-hmm. since you're sort of new to this art form, what do you think opera is?
Any answer I would give, there's going to be an opera out there that defies that. So I can say it's something that tells a story through words, but then there are pieces by, Meredith Monk that don't use words. But it is, I think, it's a dramatic form that tells a story through mm-hmm. voice.
You're mm-hmm. nodding your head on it.
Yeah.
Does that work for you? And for you, Lembit, too?
I'm not even going to.
You're not even going to go there. Don't leave me out here.
Yeah,
but
I'm absolutely, I absolutely agree, because the Baroque opera and Romantic opera and today's opera, when we can have a voice with an actor and no instruments, it's also, we can call it opera, because there is dramatic line, there is dramatic sense, and there is music. and this is on the stage. So, of course.
All of that is opera.
All of this is opera, yeah.
Well, I'd love to play actually a selection from your opera having its debut in Philadelphia this weekend called Wedding. And I'm not going to say the Serbian word,
yes,
because I know.
Svadba, Wedding, yes, which is the same word.
Which is the same word.
Yes.
And this is their six females?
Six female singers, yes.
And it's a cappella.
Yes, very unusual. opera. Of course, actually, it was the idea of the Queen of Pudding's music theater company from Toronto. It was our fourth collaboration, and each one, it was different. A challenge for all of us, and they know that I like challenges, so they asked me, what do you think about writing an a cappella opera? And I just couldn't believe it could be possible.
Wow.
Because of course, with six singers, so I finally I thought about it, and I had this idea about the wedding. Actually, preparation for the wedding.
The night before.
The night
really?
Before. It's like shower. We have in Serbian really word, which is very connected to this shower. Girls, night before the wedding, where actually I had to find some situation in the life where we have six women and where something interesting is going to happen. Well, so I thought it was a good moment.
Well, let's listen. And this is the Queen of Pudding's Music Theater Company, their production of Wedding. Let's listen. That's just a taste of Wedding there. And first of all, I think it's beautiful. The harmonies are beautiful, and I'm not sure what they're saying.
Yeah, there is a little bit of onomatopoeia, like Bill Bull, which doesn't mean anything. It's like tra-la-la.
Right.
And this is the second scene where the girls are coloring hair to the bride.
Oh.
Yes. So what you hear, these are little cups. They're mixing, actually, the colors.
And that's that percussive sound.
This is this percussive sound, yes. I wanted to use everyday's elements to make music. So there is no really percussions. Actually, there are not really instruments in the music, but a little everyday's object which we use to make to help musically.
Missy, let me play. I'd like to play something from your opera, Song from the Uproar. And this is Here Where Footprints Erase the Graves. But tell us a bit about your opera.
Sure. Well, Song from the Uproar premiered last year at The Kitchen, a venue in New York, in a production produced by Beth Morrison. And it tells the story, it's based on the life and writings of Isabel Eberhard, who was an early 20th century Swiss woman who traveled to North Africa by herself and dressed as a man and had this very operatic, crazy life in North Africa, and died very young, died at 27 when a flash flood came and wiped out her town, and left behind volumes of journals and short stories and unfinished novels. And so this opera is really sort of an abstract exploration of her life, and all the text comes in some way from a line from her journal or from one of her short stories. So the selection that you're about to hear is takes place, sort of giving away the ending. She dies, like in every opera, someone has to fall in love and die. But she's sort of, this is after the flood comes, and this is the very end.
And this is Here Where Footprints Erase the Graves.
Thank you.
That's a selection from Song from the Uproar, Here Where the Footprints Erase the Graves, composed by one of our guests, Missy Mazzoli. I'm not used to hearing what sounds like an electric guitar in an opera.
It is an electric guitar, and this whole the whole opera, it's there's some strange things in it. So instead of a pit orchestra, I used this chamber group Now Ensemble from New York, which has electric guitar, piano, double bass, flute, and clarinet. And there's also a lot of electronics in the opera, too. So,
well, and I love the sort of layering of sounds, and there are things that you hear. You're not quite exactly sure what am I hearing?
Mm-hmm.
And the voices sound beautiful as well on top of that.
Thank you. I should say that's Abby Fisher, who is our soloist there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have to say, we've listened to two pieces of opera, and I've been listening with you, and each of you just intently listening to the music. Do you like to hear what you've done, Missy?
I don't know if like is the word. I mean, it's sort of, in this situation, a little bit painful because you're so critical, and especially sitting with two amazing composers. It's easy to think, like, what are they thinking? Do they like it?
We like it. I like it very much.
were you thinking the same thing, Anna?
As we were
listening to your piece?
Yeah, it's very difficult because this is out of context. It's just an excerpt. So we cannot, we can like it this moment, but what it means in the whole dramatic time, right. this is. But this is good to have this taste before.
Well, and we felt some sense of you know, cutting into all of your operas because we are just pulling out little pieces. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation, talking with three opera composers, Anna Sokolovic, Missy Mazzoli, and Limbit Beecher. We'll be playing one of Limbit's pieces after this very short break. So stay with us. We will be right back.
Supporting WHYY, The Economist, covering news and ideas that interconnect the world to give readers a worldview. On newsstands, in bookstores, at economist.com, or on smartphones and tablets.
The Kimmel Center supports WHYY and presents A Conversation with the Barefoot Contessa, featuring cookbook author and television host Ina Garten, Tuesday, November 12th in Verizon Hall. On stage, Garten delivers an insider's view of the world of the Barefoot Contessa, shares her natural approach to simple food cooked with love and passion, and engages the audience in an interactive question and answer session. The Barefoot Contessa, November 12th at the Kimmel Center. Tickets at kimmelcenter.org.
It's not about the pings, it's not about the dings, and it's definitely not about the mugs. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for what a successful membership campaign is about, supporting a new service that has your best interests in mind, whether on a global, local, or national level. We will invest your membership dollars right back into the news and programs that you expect from us. So thanks to you for making the campaign such a fabulous success. Thanks.
Pico supports WHYY. Inefficient lighting can account for 30 to 60% of your business's annual electricity costs. The Pico Smart Business e-audit offers customized tips to help manage energy costs. Details at pico.com/smartideas.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with Anna Sokolovic, a Serbian-born, Montreal-based composer whose opera Wedding, having its American premiere this weekend in Philadelphia, presented by Opera Philadelphia and Fringe Arts at the new Fringe Arts venue on Columbus Boulevard. Missy Mazzoli is a Lansdale-born, Brooklyn-based composer, composer in residence at Opera Philadelphia, also has a band and ensemble called Victoire. We'll be playing a selection from that later on in the show. And our third guest is Limbit Beecher. He's a California-born, New York-based composer, also composer in residence at Opera Philadelphia. Well, as I said during the break, Limbit, you're next. We're going to play a selection from your opera, and then I remember a documentary oratorio, you call it.
Yeah. Well, it was a piece I was looking to tell a particular story, and I didn't really know what form it would take, and I ended up, a documentary oratorio seemed to be the best name to call it.
And why was that?
It was based on stories that my grandmother used to tell me when I was growing up. She has this amazing story of she was born in Estonia in 1922. She fell in love, and then right about that time, the Russians invaded, and then the Germans invaded later in World War II, and then the Russians invaded again, and at that point she decided to, enough was enough, escape first to Poland, and then at the end of the war, and traveled eventually to the United States. It's kind of an unbelievable story of escapes and a lot of poignancy, and I wanted to first record these stories, and as I interviewed her more and more about them, I felt like I wanted to capture that feeling of listening to her stories in some way, and write a piece using these stories and using the sound of her voice as a basis. At first, I thought it would be an opera, but it didn't really have the right dramatic feeling.
That's interesting.
For to be an opera. It didn't have those moments of that, those types of aria moments, those moments of crisis and decision. I felt it needed to be a little more, I don't know, stylized or a little more presentational, like an oratorio. So,
We're all ears. This is a Cornet Blue Shirt. Let's listen.
Was supposed to be Cornet Blue Shirt from And Then I Remember, but unfortunately it was doubled there. My apologies to you, Lembit.
No, it actually sounded kind of great, so maybe I'll go with that next time.
I guess accidents sometimes lead to, hopefully, to inspiration. Yeah. But we do hear your grandmother's voice in there. We hear her talking about her bicycle. And
yeah, I loved those little details, the Cornet Blue Shirt, the seeing her future husband come up on the bicycle, that those little moments that seem so much, so poignant. Mm. And there's a backdrop of history to the piece and a backdrop of war. And originally I thought that the war and those elements, the larger history, would have a bigger role in it. But it's really not as much what my grandmother emphasized in her stories. And it's not what felt to carry the most emotional weight.
Well, it's about memory in a lot of ways, right?
Definitely about memory.
I'm curious, you grew up in Serbia, actually,
yes.
in Belgrade. Mm-hmm. What kind of music did you grow up hearing?
If you come to hear Svadba, wedding,
that's what you grew
tomorrow
up hearing.
You will hear. This is very interesting because I grew up with the classical music and with rock and pop music. And I didn't listen at all folk music. Right. It was something I didn't like, absolutely. But, of course, I was impregnated by this music. It was part of my cultural education and a part of my being. But separated physically from my country, maybe because I'm not nostalgic in a way maybe I'm musically nostalgic. Or something is happening when you're separated from your country. You probably start to see what are your musical background. And I actually heard that I have something which is different. And I tried to see what it is, because my education was completely Western education, Western classical music education. But the audience in Montreal heard, oh, you have something very special, something. And I said, what? And they said, something, you know, Eastern European. I said, no. At the beginning, I was really, what are you talking? I'm a contemporary music composer, you know. But after I start to think about it, and then I actually accepted, and I started little by little to be inspired with. This is very interesting. But this opera is singing in Serbian. And this is Canadian, of course, company, Canadian singers who are singing in America. So this is exciting. But I'm using language as music. I'm trying to be inspired by the language as music. And this is what I do for many, many years. This, you asked me what is my background.
Sure, sure.
So this is really classical music with inspiration from my background. And what I found is that Serbian music, Balkan music, is very rhythmical. And more south you are going, it's even more oriental. Mm-hmm. And actually, this is the same thing with the food. You are going northern Serbia, it's more Middle Europe, and you are going south, it's more oriental, more spicy. And the rhythms are more irregular. And the singing is the rhythms are more complex, very, very complex, and I think it's all connected with the language, because the language is very rhythmical, Serbian as a language. So I use this rhythm to make rhythms, musical rhythms, and that's why I use the language.
How about for you, Missy? And you grew up outside of Philadelphia.
I did. I grew up in Lansdale, and my parents are not musical. I did not grow up listening to a lot of classical music. It was mostly just me driving around in the suburbs in my dad's car, listening to whatever was on the radio. So pop music has always had a huge impact on me. But I also fell in love with classical music at a very young age. And I felt that because my access to classical music was so limited, every time I did encounter it, I felt like it was this amazing, revolutionary event.
Where would you listen, or where would you see it or encounter it?
My parents had a couple like greatest hits tapes of Beethoven and Mozart, you know, they put on in the car. And so I lived for these like few cassettes. And then we'd go to hear the Philadelphia Orchestra for field trips in school. So this was like actually my first encounter with classical music was just actually right around here. But I think it was very useful to not have musical parents, because I think instead of leading me towards a career as a pianist or a performer, I chose to be a composer and was allowed to find my own way from day one, which has been great.
And how about for you, Levitt?
I grew up as a pianist, actually, initially, and I was a big romantic music aficionado, Chopin, and I used to have tapes of New World Symphony and Dvorak Serenade for Strings, which I used to fall asleep to, which I'm mostly not guilty about now.
Just a little bit?
A little, every now and then, maybe the Moldau isn't quite as good a piece as I thought it used to be. And then I discovered, I think Stravinsky and Bartok and some of those composers. And it was maybe a little bit later that I started discovering Estonian music. And it was more than the Estonian music itself. It was Estonia had been such a big figure in the life in our family, that I talk about Estonia, and it gained independence when I was 11 years old. And that sort of search for that part of my identity search for that, for what that all meant, I think drove me to start incorporating Estonian elements in my music.
Well, there's some parallels between you and Anna, going back to some of your musical heritage or musical roots.
Yeah, I think for me it's sort of because our family, I grew up in California, it's sort of a looking back at something that wasn't totally mine, but trying to find something that is somewhere there.
But this Estonian music is very much based on vocal music.
Yes.
It's so amazing. So I think there is inspiration for you.
yes. Lots of, and it's mostly female vocal music.
Yeah. It's the choirs and
yes.
Beautiful voices, yeah.
Let me just quickly reintroduce the three of you, talking with three opera composers, Limit Beecher, also composer in residence at Opera Philadelphia, Missy Mazzoli, yes, also a composer in residence at Opera Philadelphia, and Anna Sokolovich and her opera Wedding having its American premiere this weekend, presented by Opera Philadelphia and Fringe Arts. And we're playing selections from some of their compositions and talking about their approach to their work. Missy, let me go back to you, because I'd love to play a selection from Cathedral City. Sure. Now, this is your ensemble, your band called Victoire.
Yes.
Tell us just a bit about Victoire, and then we'll listen to Cathedral City.
Sure. Victoire is a band that I started about 5 years ago. It's a flexible group of anywhere from 5 to 8 people. And instrumentation is really a combination of all of my interests. So it's classical and indie rock. We have violin, clarinet, double bass, but we also have keyboards, electronics, singers, synthesizers, sometimes a drummer. So it's sort of this mix. And I started it with the idea that I wanted to be able to take my music anywhere. I wanted to be able to play in clubs, art galleries, bars, and also in concert halls. So we started off just playing in my living room in 2008, and venues like The Stone or Le Poisson Rouge in New York City. We're actually playing Carnegie Hall in February.
You are.
It's been an incredible crazy, crazy journey.
Congratulations.
That was the only promo I'm going to do on the show, I swear to God. So Cathedral City was off of our first CD, which came out in 2010 on New Amsterdam Records. And the selection you're going to hear, the interesting thing about this piece is that I assembled the percussion part using found sounds in my childhood home in Lansdale. So it's everything you hear is hedge clippers, washing machines, coffee makers, just chopped up into little pieces, and that forms the drum track.
Oh, that's great. And why Victoire? Why that name?
I don't know. I wanted something sort of mysterious. it just sort of happened, and we didn't question it. So,
well, let's listen. This is Cathedral City. Cathedral City, composed by our guest Missy Mazzoli, performed by her ensemble Victoire. Whose voice is that, and what are they saying?
Oh, at the
very end
there,
yes.
That is James Joyce. I found a recording of him reciting a part of Finnegan's Wake, and it happened to be in the exact same rhythm as the piece of music. And I thought, this is just the find of a lifetime, and I have to sample
good
this.
Good for you.
And at the end, he's saying, throw the cobwebs from your eyes, woman, and spread your washing proper. And then you hear a sample of my washing machine. So I thought that it was just perfect.
You're having much too much fun.
I know, really. Why not?
But do you let me put it to you, but I'd be interested in from all of you. I mean, do you feel like you are pushing the boundaries of opera, or that opera can contain all of this?
I think opera is a big, unless you're trying to define opera in a very traditional way, which one can, and there is that sort of definition for opera that there's something very particular that is grand opera. I think opera is such a big boat, and maybe it's the wrong word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe we need a different word that doesn't have as many connotations.
Right.
Because there's something that's just naturally very, I think, seductive for a composer to be able to combine all these different elements and try to tell a story or express something. And sometimes maybe the name opera is limiting when it suggests a very specific way of making a piece.
How about for you, Anna?
I mean, there is no limits, because Baroque opera and today's opera, and of course there is some evolution, and evolution will continue. I mean, we're just part of it. We're just now doing something what is the part of our time. What happened in each period of human existence, it's the reality of the moment where we are living. So today technology is very developed. But it's less developed, it will be in 50 years. So in 50 years, we'll have something else. I don't know, holograms,
right.
Opera or whatever.
Yes,
but,
right.
You know, it's just we're part of our time, and that's what we are doing. If we use electric guitar, or if we use, why not, if it works. There is, of course, all the time, there is a danger with the new things, because you can sometimes replace the quality with the technology. But it was always the question of this. Everything is the question of balance. If you know how to use technology, it's good. If not, it's good to try. And then the time will pronounce what will happen.
So, yeah. I think that's one of the really fun things writing opera is to look back at what worked and try to see how that can mix with what you're doing now and take what elements you really like about traditional opera styles.
Yes, because we are talking about, I mean, dramatically, we didn't do anything more, and we are not doing anything more since the Greek tragedy, you know? Everything, yeah. I mean, form is a form, and time is time, and you have to make it that it worked. So this is the problem, because you need a time for an opera, so it's not short. So how you will organize your time is the main problem. But what technology you will use, this is another thing. You know?
Well, I want to talk about time after this very short break. That's Anna
Sokolovich.
I was doing so well. Missy Mazzoli and Lemet Beecher, they are all composers. They compose operas. We'll be back after this very short break.
Plymouth Meeting Friends School supports WHYY. Serving pre-K through 6th grades, Plymouth Meeting Friends School's program provides an academic, social, and emotional foundation designed to create confident, curious, and community-oriented learners. Since 1780, Plymouth Meeting Friends School has been helping children to develop into globally conscious, responsible young people. An open house is Saturday, November 2nd at 2 p.m. More information at 610-828-2288, extension 226, or pmfs1780.org.
The bell tolled for Mariel Hemingway the day she was born.
The Hemingway family, it's a legacy to be so admired, but it's also wrought with addiction and suicide and depression.
A lifetime of brilliance, talent, and running from crazy. Ernest Hemingway's granddaughter Mariel on the new documentary about her family's tumultuous history. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
The Delaware Art Museum supports WHYY and presents American Moderns, 1910 to 1960, from O'Keeffe to Rockwell, now through January 5th. From nostalgic to avant-garde, this exhibition from the Brooklyn Museum's collection highlights changes in American art and culture in the early 20th century, featuring works by N.C. Wyeth, Milton Avery, Georgia O'Keeffe, Norman Rockwell, and Grandma Moses. More at 302-571-9590 or delart.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne talking with Lembit Beecher and Missy Mazzoli. They are both composers in residence at Opera Philadelphia. And with Anna Sokolovic, a Serbian-born Montreal-based composer. Her opera Wedding, as I said during this hour, having its American premiere this weekend, presented by Opera Philadelphia and Fringe Arts at the new Fringe Arts venue on Columbus Boulevard. And we are talking a bit about how they approach their work. And one of the things, or you said several things actually before we began the show. One, Lembit, was just how personal opera is, but also that it takes time. I mean, it takes time for an idea to develop and to be able to put all this music on the page. Can you talk all of it? I'd love to have all three of you talk about it.
Sure, yeah. I think, at least for me, it's an incredibly personal personal venture trying to find the right story. And I think the crazy thing about sort of getting, I'm pretty new to writing opera, but experiencing it through this residency program, which is really an incredible program and gives us the luxury of this of an amazing
stretch of time, right?
Of 3 years. And the amazing thing is how many other people are involved. You have one little idea and suddenly, you know, whether it's directors and librettists and the company gets involved and starts developing it in this amazing way. And it's a fantastic process, but you want to have the right, before you jump in fully, you want to have the right idea that you're willing to live with for 2-3 years at minimum. You know, it could be 4 or 5 years that you're working on a project.
Yeah, is that true for you, Missy? I mean,
absolutely. I mean, I think that another thing that's essential, I think with all music, but particularly with opera, is just this workshopping process. Mm-hmm. So I think there's this myth that people have about composers in general, and even with opera, that you sort of sit down and write it from beginning to end and just birth it perfectly. And it's like, how could that possibly be true? I mean, there's so many elements involved. And until you see it on stage, and actually until you see it and hear it with an audience, right, you don't know if the piece really works. So yes, this process of workshopping where you're playing little bits for people, trying things out, changing things, is totally, totally essential. And that's what people, I think, don't realize. And that's what this residency provides.
And do you work on a piano? Is that sort of where you compose? And do you need to sing to compose opera?
Do you need Thankfully, no. Because no. I can't sing at all.
Oh, really?
I don't know about the two of you. But
I sing badly. I mean, I always sing. And then I tape myself and listen back to how I was singing. And it's the worst voice
you
can imagine. But in my mind, it sounds great. So that's, so.
That's what is important. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's in your mind?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. And your approach, I mean, do you see it as collaborative and as perhaps
as
complicated?
Of course, it's collaborative, but the composer has to felt in love with the libretto, with the text. It's so important. This intimate part is that you, this is really what is representing you, and this is really the subject what is and kind of operas, which is I understood that I don't like murders. You know, I don't want any murder, maybe comic murder, you know, in my operas.
Oh.
I understood this is part of my personality, you know. I like satire?
Satire?
Satire, yes. Or I like something which is like this opera with Svadba, which is something also different. So, you know, I think it's very important that we are standing with our libretto together.
Sure. And you start with text. So all of you start with text? Is that where you begin?
Of course. Mm-hmm.
Is that pretty typical for opera? And then, Lembit, I do want to play another piece of your...
Yeah, I think, I mean, it was text or was sometimes, you know, in a couple of projects I'm working on now with more of a graphic novel or some images as mm-hmm. much as text. But,
Right. And I know for you, Missy, your was really based on these diaries left behind.
Right. Song from the Uproar. Everything sort of, I wanted everything to be from her, Isabel Eberhard's voice. So everything is either a direct quote from her journal or sort of an extrapolation from her journal that I changed with my librettist, Royce Vavrick. We worked on it together and sort of made things just easier to sing.
Well, Lembit, I do want to play These Memories May Be True. This is a string quartet, and I love the title of this, Estonian Grandmother Superhero.
Yes, this is the third movement of the quartet. I don't only write pieces about my grandmother, but this is another one. A little different take. It was written actually shortly after she died, and I wanted to do something that sort of reflected on her legacy, and in some ways is maybe less direct than And Then I Remember. In this movement, it's I wanted to capture the way that she depicted herself storming through Western Europe. You know, she was really a superhero in her own stories.
That's great.
Which was mostly true, but maybe not totally. So there's a little bit of comic bookness to the quartet.
Let's listen. This is Estonian Grandmother Superhero. Estonian Grandmother Superhero, composed by one of our guests, Lembit Beecher, from his piece called These Memories May Be True. There's a lot going on in that.
Yeah, and I should give a shout out to the Aizuri Quartet for sort of an amazing performance of that piece.
And how important is what you call what you do? And by that, I mean a title, Song from the Uproar. How important was it that your opera be called that, Missy?
Well, again, it's very personal. I have a really hard time with titles. They always come after the piece has been written and after lots of agony and soul searching. But for that piece, I wanted something that was not literal. I wanted something, again, something mysterious, something that sort of reflected the emotional state that our heroine is going through rather than, you know, the story of Isabel Eberhard.
Yes, yes, yes.
And Song from the Uproar is this phrase that just sort of, I wanted it to intrigue people so they wanted to listen. And it's this idea of the chaos of her life and this one distinct song emerging in the form of her journals, but also now in the form of the opera.
Did titles matter for you, Anna?
Of course, of course. It's very important.
Because it's what we call what you
of
do.
Of course, yeah.
And for you?
Yeah, I often end up with somewhat long, unwieldy titles, but I like the process of thinking about a name. It's just a little bit independent than the compositional process, but it's one that I kind of enjoy.
Do you have certain rituals for opening nights when you have a piece that's premiering? And perhaps I'll toss this to you, Anna, because you have a piece premiering this weekend in Philadelphia.
Yes.
At least it's American premiere.
I think so. Probably, yes. I didn't think about this. Yes, probably I have some rituals, but I don't think about.
Sorry to ask you that question.
No, it's okay. I just have to think about it. So maybe you have.
How about for you, Missy? I mean, are you pacing? Or are you?
I mean, the first thing that came to mind was having a strong drink. Actually, if I don't have to perform, then usually your activities are dictated. You have all these responsibilities opening night where you have to make sure that you're meeting patrons or, you know, meeting your family. I don't know. There's all these sort of responsibilities. So I find myself wrapped up in that and try to work in a strong drink at some point.
and when it's opening, are you, let's assuming you're not playing, are you in the audience? You're behind the stage? Are you on the street, you know, going back and forth on the sidewalk? Or?
I would love to be just in the back of the theater pacing. That would be my ideal place. But usually I'm in the audience. Mm-hmm. I think that's typical for composers.
Actually, I know what is the ritual is that I'm absolutely frustrated because everyone is doing something, but composer, I don't have anything to do. So there is a kind of I was a performer, so I like this adrenaline which is there, but I don't have place to use it. So I try to run or to do something physically because nobody needs me, you know?
Your work is done.
Work is already done. So, you know, I'm just there to be there. So I try to... It's a little bit frustrating in a positive way.
How about for you, Levitt?
I totally agree. I love it when I have a premiere on a program that I'm performing on also, or when I'm performing in a premiere, because it takes... Somehow it takes the pressure, that type of pressure of not being able to do anything off.
Well, speaking of premieres, I do want to play another just section from your a cappella chamber opera wedding. And perhaps you could even set this up for us, Anna, just so, because the voices are doing interesting things, and I don't know what to call them.
Yes, excellent. Actually, whole opera is inspired by way of singing on the Balkans, and there is a way of singing which is very open throat, and which we can call call songs, because of the some geographical places we have to call someone. So the way of talking and the way of singing is a little bit different. So I think these fantastic singers, Canadian singers, they try to imitate this kind of song singing, and actually this is the last scene,
yes,
which we'll hear in a few minutes, which is actually harmonically very simple. It's just a minor, I think, chord, and there is a lot of trills actually going, which is technically very Baroque. Monteverdi used this, but all this ornamentation Monteverdi did in his opera were very much inspired by Oriental and Balkan singing.
Ah.
So this is very connected somewhere, you know. So this what we can say, it's very very simple for singers, especially who did Baroque operas.
Well, let's listen. And this is a selection near the end of our guest Anna Sokolovich's a cappella chamber opera called Wedding. Selection from Wedding, an a cappella chamber opera composed by Anna Sokolovich. And it's just fascinating to hear those voices.
Yes, but they're moving. On the stage, they're moving, so we don't hear them. But yeah, the singers are really, really great.
Indeed, really. Indeed. Mm. I'm curious about just, and we only have a couple of minutes before we have to say goodbye, but just when you're beginning to think about an opera, perhaps I'll start with you, Missy, which is, do you have an intention of writing an opera, or is it just you're writing something and then maybe it becomes an opera, maybe it's something for your band, maybe it's something for someone else's ensemble?
Well, I always know exactly where it's going to go the second I start writing the notes.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, because with an opera, it's just such a different process from writing a short chamber piece or a piece for my band or a solo piece. And for me, it's always about finding that story. And there's sort of this magical moment when I find a story that I feel can be translated into an opera. And it's hard to put my finger on what that is, but it's not every great short story or play or idea or plot line or news item makes a good opera. It has to be the sort of magic combination of things. So I think that, for me, is the moment of inspiration.
Mm-hmm. How about for you, Levitt?
It's with this residency program, it's been interesting thinking about large scale projects, because there's so many projects that just won't work for opera, and so many stories that won't. And I think, oh, this will work great as a song cycle, as an oratorio. But it, as Missy was saying, it's the very particular type of thing that will work, that you think you could make work as an opera.
Because it's like a novel, I guess. I mean, it's not a short story, it's a novel.
Right. Well, it needs to have everyone's approach is different, but it needs to have a certain dramatic arc. It needs to be able to sustain a certain amount of energy, whether it's through plot tension or through something abstract. You have to find a way into it that will allow you to sustain some sort of through line or direction.
How about for you, Anna?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's art of the time, of time. And the time is long. And you have to organize it in a good way. So, yeah, the story has to be good.
Do you compose every day?
Yes.
Yes, for you,
but not
yes.
Operas.
But not operas. Are you always composing every day, doing
yes.
something?
Every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for totally, you, Limit as well.
Totally, yeah.
And is that just yeah. because that's where you're... That's where your mind goes and you're hearing things?
Yeah, I mean, I almost always sort of sit down to compose every day, but even if I don't, you know, things are moving on in the back yeah. of your mind and it's,
I think it's really like a muscle. I mean, it's like jogging every day. You know, mm-hmm. you feel it. If you don't jog one day, it's harder mm-hmm. to start the next day. So I think creative work is very similar. Mm-hmm. But and that's sort of a universal thing with artists. Absolutely. Every artist I know tries mm-hmm. to do it every day.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, it's been a great pleasure to have all three of you with us on Radio Times. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And again, our guests have been Missy Mazzoli and Limit Beecher, both composers in residence at Opera Philadelphia. Also with us, Anna Sokolovich, and again, her opera Wedding, having its American premiere this weekend in Philadelphia, presented by Opera Philadelphia and Fringe Arts, taking place at the new Fringe Arts venue at 140 North Columbus Boulevard. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out much more about this program. Stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.